T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What a day to be talking sports in the greatest city in the world. Good morning, Spieg. Spiegel and Parkins live from the Park at Wrigley.
A few weeks ago, we targeted this date,
yeah,
circled it, and said, hey, man, let's look at it. That could be Trubisky's first game. I think it's going to be, and it could be Cubs. I believe I said going for the sweep at Wrigley Field. And
can't have it all.
Was close.
Was close.
It was very close to that being the case. But either way, what a crazy double. And there's something for everybody. White Sox fans, Chris Sale has been bad in the postseason. But here's Jose Quintana. You get a chance to look at him. And you know you've got Eloy Jimenez in your back pocket from it. So maybe you can just watch and wish good things for Jose Quintana. Something for everybody. And the Blackhawks play later, too. We're not going to do any bulls.
I don't think Lauri Markkanen's debut will get much run today. Joe Ostrowski can put a box score in his update.
I think that was it. We just did it.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, it's done.
Yeah, there
I feel
it is.
Good. Good morning, man.
Good morning. Come on out to the park at Wrigley Field, even if you're not going to the game. The vibes around here and there's just the city. I mean, it was buzzing with the marathon yesterday,
yeah.
The early Cubs today, Monday Night Football and Trubisky's debut tonight. It's just an incredible thing. I feel very fortunate to be talking sports in my hometown today.
Right there with you. And the gratitude for getting to do this on a day like today. And then I know, man, you're wearing a sandwich board today, paying off the sandwich board bet we made months ago.
That's true. I'll be doing it around Wrigley from like 1:30 to 2:30 today.
And then both going to the game. I'm going as a fan today. You're going as media today.
I'll go in on a press pass. If anyone wants to invite me to a seat out there, I'd be happy to get out of the stuffy press box. But I am I'm trying to pull off the doubleheader.
Yeah, you're doing because then after the Cubs, I'll go home and watch Trubisky on the big screen along with Twitter and all our folks watching Gruden and Sean McDonough, and you're going to that game.
I'm going to try, man. This is the biggest Chicago sports day since I've gotten my dream job, so I just want to experience it. I took the train here this morning, was periscoping my walk to the train. I'll do the sandwich board. I'll go to the Cubs game. I will then get out on a red line, go down to Roosevelt, and then hop a cab or sprint.
Sprint.
Probably sprint.
Dude, yeah. I live down there, man. I've seen the scene. You have no chance of a cab or anything like that getting close, I don't think.
Okay, well, then maybe I should go one step further. Like, text line 670.
Go to Cermak.
Go to Cermak on the red line, then get a car from there.
I would go to Cermak, and then, you know what I would do? I would go to Cermak and then, get a cab over to, like, on Indiana and 18th, where you can go underneath there and you go to the footbridge, but then you still got to walk on the other side.
That's
no easy way.
That's fine. And then I'll go to Trubisky's debut and then do post-game media and talk in the locker room and then have no car at Soldier Field and figure out my way home, and then I'll be back to talk to you at 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Come and grab my couch in the South Loop, man. You're welcome to it.
That's possible. I might be there.
I will not turn you away. I may be asleep and pretend I'm asleep so I don't have to answer the door, but I wouldn't turn you away if I'm awake.
I wouldn't blame you. But, yeah, I'm excited for it. It's gonna be a marathon, but it's going to be a lot of fun. This is my version of the Chicago Marathon. You know what I mean? Some people run 26.2 miles.
Right.
I just go to two sporting
right
events.
And you got a time like a pulled pork sandwich somewhere.
That's right,
maybe 11:40.
Yeah, it'll be
something
a less
like that.
Healthy version of the marathon.
We've got Jeff Passan today. We've got to talk all baseball. We've got Rich Campbell today to talk Bears and help preview Mitchapalooza.
Passan at 11, Rich Campbell at 10, and a Hall of Famer at 9:40, Chris Carter, maybe the best member of the Minnesota Vikings ever, host of First Things First on Fox Sports 1. He will join us at 9:40 to tell some Bears-Vikings stories and give us a little look at the Minnesota Vikings. That lineup brought to you by the Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer. The Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer takes stress out of caring for a sick child using a gentle forehead scan. Get yours at your local club, warehouse, or other fine retailers. And tune in Tuesday, October 10th to Built Ford Tough Bears Monday on a Tuesday, brought to you by your local Ford store.
That loss was a gut punch, Danny. That sucked. I was there for the second game as well, and then went to post games. So I was in the locker room, or in the clubhouse, I should say, at Madden's post game. If anybody was watching post game, I was the one who asked about Zobrist in left field, because that's driving me crazy to see Zobrist out there. And the effort on the home run ball where he looked like Eddie Curry deciding not to jump for a rebound.
Right, the famous Scott Skiles line. How could he improve his rebounding jump?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, Zobrist could have gotten more than 1 inch off the ground. It would have been nice.
Would have been nice. He mistimed, maybe got confused by the padding of the wall that he hit. I don't know what the hell happened. Looked awkward a few other times. He really needs to not be in the finishing outfield. I think Madden had him there, as he said, because he knew he was going to come up as a right-hander against a lefty in the ninth inning. Wanted one more at bat, but it's not like Zobrist's at bats have been anything special so far either. So there's that issue. But everybody wants to talk about the bullpen, about the way that went down, about how much it sucked. I have long thoughts. I know you do, too.
Yeah, I mean, where I come out on this is that Dusty Baker didn't lose Game 1 for the Nationals and Joe Maddon didn't lose Game 2 for the Cubs. Like, managers matter, but neither one of them was responsible for the outcome of that game. Like, you could argue Joe Girardi was absolutely responsible for the outcome of Game 1 for the Yankees. In the Harper-Edwards situation, Edwards has to bury that curveball more to Bryce Harper. Their best player beat you, and he hadn't looked good. And if we would have done this going into the series, and I would have said to you, Matt Spiegel, rank Cubs relievers in order of confidence, most confident to least confident. There would have been a consensus on most confident with Wade Davis. And I think Carl Edwards would have been second most confident.
Yes.
So I have no problem with your second best relief pitcher in that spot facing Bryce Harper. Carl Edwards has to execute that pitch. That's not on Joe Maddon.
Edwards got behind 3-1, and then Edwards hangs the curve. It's a terrible pitch, terrible execution. He knows it and said so. He's supposed to bury the curve, and then you walk him. That's fine, and then you move on. But the truth of the matter is, we got here to this point. You've known that Bryce Harper and Daniel Murphy were looming all year long. There is no lefty specialist that you like more than Carl Edwards in that spot. There isn't. Justin Wilson has failed since he's gotten here. Joe does not have the confidence in him. So you want Justin Wilson? Mike Montgomery is not built as a specific lefty specialist like that, for that. He was there getting ready, but that's not, you know, Carl Edwards' OPS that he has given up against lefties this year is 437. It's minuscule. I do not have a problem with Joe's decision. It's not, is maybe it's a 60-40 decision or a 70-30 decision because Harper is better against righties than he is against lefties, but it's not some no-brainer, and you don't just base it on handedness. You look at the freaking numbers and look at the tendencies and look at the pitch styles. It's on Edwards to execute. And he did not.
And Bryce Harper hadn't looked good either. You talk about Zobrist not having good at bats. Neither had Bryce Harper.
It hadn't looked good in the field either. Or on the base path. There hadn't been one moment where Bryce Harper looked like Bryce Harper until Edwards hung a curveball in a brutal situation. There is nobody. Justin Wilson has failed. Dunsing is good against lefties, but actually better against righties if you look at his splits. And they apparently don't trust Dunsing as the loogie. It's stark that Edwards is the best choice. That in itself is kind of is stark and sort of shocking to be the case now that you're here. But it is the case now that you're here, because who do you want? You want Montgomery against him? Maybe Joe will do that next time. He says no, but it's not going to be Justin Wilson.
Well, yeah, and you can make an argument that if it's not going to be Justin Wilson, then what is Justin Wilson's value on the playoff roster?
Let's talk about that, because I think Joe has two pitchers he's not going to use unless the conditions are perfect, and that's Justin Wilson and John Lackey.
But what is perfect for Justin Wilson?
Trailing or a five-run lead.
Okay, well, then I guess you need a pitcher for those innings at some point. If that's what he is, then, of course, the move so far has been a failure, and he can redeem himself next year.
Or extra innings if you're going to have
to go to
a guy.
When you have no choice, yeah.
Like, you know, after the home run and it's tied and Montgomery's in there, Montgomery's pitching to Zimmerman. I know some people wanted Wade Davis at that point. To me, it's like, it's your closer, you're on the road. Go ahead and save your closer for a possible save situation if you get there because you're on the road. Who do you want to put in? Lackey's your only other righty. I didn't even have a problem with Montgomery there, because you want to go to Davis in a tie game like that? That's a dangerous thing in and of itself to go down.
Right. I mean, listen, I would have had no problem if you would have been hyper-aggressive and gone to Davis instead of Edwards.
Well, there...
Because that's what I was thinking about.
There is something that is completely viable as a thought process. I agree with that, because, look, Kenley Jansen's doing it. Five outs for Kenley Jansen, and Davis has done it before and has done it. He had got a five-out save in the regular season in Milwaukee, right?
Yeah, and he's done it in the postseason before, so that was the only thing that I was thinking about as I was watching back here in Chicago with some buddies was, but I, even as I was thinking about it and we were talking about it as it was going down, I had no expectation of Joe to do it, because he has to be able to trust more than just Wade Davis, because we were talking going into the playoffs about what happened with Aroldis Chapman and overusing him. So in that spot, if you're going to go down with your second best relief pitcher, okay. But in Brian Kenny's world, or maybe in baseball in like 15, 20 years from now, when everybody catches on to it and will realize that the biggest outs of the game are when your best relief pitcher should go, and not in the ninth inning, not in a save situation, that sort of thing, then Wade Davis faces the best batters. But in that situation, in 2017, I've got no problem with it being Edwards.
But all year long, Edwards has been the guy who has faced the heart of the order, whether it's 6th, 7th, or 8th,
before
you get to closer. He's been the guy you bring in for the heart of the order, righties or lefties. Lefties hit .117 against him, .437 on the OPS. He didn't bury the curveball.
Exactly.
And that in itself is an issue. We talked to Carl Edwards during the year, and he said sometimes he doesn't exactly know mechanically where things are going to go. That's a brutal pitch by him. That loss is not on Joe the way a lot of people are pinning it. And I'll hammer Joe. I've hammered Joe before, and I'm pissed about Zobrist being in the outfield. But this particular situation, it's not as simple as some people are making it.
And it's just way too easy to criticize the manager when the vast majority of the time the outcome of a baseball game is determined by the players. Like, just forget whatever the situation is. The overwhelming majority of the time, the baseball game is determined by the players on the field. Mm-hmm. You can have objectively bad decisions that sometimes bite you and sometimes don't. Like, Dusty Baker, with four lefties in the pen, leaving in a righty to face Rizzo, an objectively bad decision in game one. Dusty Baker not walking Baez to force Joe's decision on Hendricks to let him bat or go to an extra inning of relief. Now, it ends up not hurting him because Baez makes the out, but Hendricks gets to go back out there and have another scoreless inning. Those were objectively bad decisions by Dusty. One hurt them, one didn't. Joe's is not an objectively bad decision. It is just something that you can make cases for multiple things.
Absolutely.
And as long as his decision is justifiable, which it is, then it's on the player.
Yes.
Right? Dusty's were objectively bad decisions in game one.
And there was a couple other things that Dusty had done in game one. But, like, and here's the other thing. Some folks are texting in. Taking Lester out after 86 pitches was an issue for some. He pinch hit for him with John Jay, trying to get the jugular run he's talking about. They're up 3-1, and he pinch hits for him. First, Lester was on the on-deck circle for a second. Then they made the pitching change, and it's Jay instead, so they can try to get a run. I don't have a problem with that. Other people saying Strope looked good, can bring Strope back out, or if Lester goes 7, you go Strope Davis. No, it was going to be Edwards. He likes Edwards more than Strope.
As do I.
It's just Edwards hung a curveball, and Bryce Harper is pretty freaking good. The scary part is that team was ready to turtle completely. Absolutely ready to turtle completely. They kind of had, and then now they're awake. It sucks that the Nationals are awake with some confidence and have their ace going today. It's obviously not ideal, but if you went in wanting a split, you got your split. Take care of business for these two, and you don't even have to go back there.
If you're listening from out of Chicago, we appreciate you because it's a great day in this city, 670thescore.com. You can see us as we're live at the park at Wrigley at watch670thescore.com. Our broadcast today is presented by CDW and Intel. CDW, people who get it, and sponsored by Old Dominion Freight Line, the official freight carrier of Major League Baseball and the Cubs. We've got Chris Carter on Bears and Vikings coming up around 9:40. Coming up next, you were there post-game for Game 2, and you said there's an image that you cannot get out of your head as it relates to the Cubs going forward. We'll get to that next. It's Spiegel and Parkins live from the park at Wrigley on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I agree with Joe Madden's assessment of that situation. Welcome back into the Spiegel and Parkin Show, brought to you by Indeed.com. Are you hiring? Join the over 3 million businesses that use Indeed.com for hiring. Post your next job opening on the world's number one job site, Indeed.com. Speaks, I did not even see this coming. I know it'll be a shock to you, but the Miami Dolphins offensive line coach who was filmed doing cocaine. Filmed himself doing cocaine in his team office and a, quote, Vegas model, which is a classy way to say prostitute.
Or stripper.
Released the video on Facebook. I know this is going to come as a shock to you.
Yeah.
He resigned.
That that was a really awful, really brutal minute and 6 seconds of video there. I know. There was some entertainment value.
It was pretty funny.
It's a guy.
It's pretty funny.
I did not find it funny.
I know, because you're trying to be an evolved, better human than me. But, I mean, off the air, you'll admit that that's funny.
Well, it's the fact that, like, so I don't know whether he's an addict or not.
Neither do I.
He's clearly professing his love during the cocaine usage, like, this is our thing, baby. This is what we do together. It's part of my love. And when I do it, I think of you. And that's just so freaking twisted and sordid.
Hey, who are you to judge another man's love to a Vegas model? Come on. What you do in the privacy of your own office, God, with your own illicit drugs, with your own prostitute and on camera is just not anybody else's business.
There's just so much there. And he's like, I know you can't do it for a while because you got to keep the baby. Did everybody catch that?
I caught that part.
Oh, my God. And then he's doing it before he's going into the meeting. And then he's sharing it with her. He's voluntarily sharing it.
Just think of the trust that he had to send that video from that office to that person's employment status. Pretty remarkable video. And so how'd you get fired from your last job?
Well, it might have been the cocaine or the prostitute or the video.
I don't know. Sure.
But honestly, the toughest part of that video to explain is not the cocaine. Like, that is, like, third on the list of, like, why the hell did you record yourself doing that, and why the hell did you send it to a prostitute?
Why did you send it? Well, he thought their love was pure, Danny.
And I'm not saying the cocaine's a good thing or an easy thing to explain. I'm saying it's the third thing.
He thought their love was really, really pure and was going to survive all sorts of things.
He was wrong. So tell me about what you saw after game two in D.C.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of stuff Saturday in the post game that is stuck in my head. There was actually a moment of levity from John Lester, which I could get to later if we have time. But, you know, you go in and you watch Joe do the post game, some of that you heard, and then you walk into the clubhouse, at least I did, and there's the manager's office on the right. And I see Joe stepping out of the manager's office, going to get something, I don't know what, just looked at him, nodded. And then I kind of turned to my right and I looked into the manager's office. There's a desk, and next to it, there's like a big leather chair. And sitting in the leather chair is Theo Epstein, as angry and fuming as any human I've seen in recent memory. Just, it looked there. If there could have been steam coming out of his head, there would have been. Just eyebrows down, just fully bodily tense, just unbelievably angry and fuming, and I've never seen him look like that. And so he's furious. And I go and I ask one of the beat writers, like, wow, Theo looks really angry. And beat writer's like, yeah, he doesn't take losing well.
No.
So we've heard all these stories about how competitive he is.
Exactly.
And we hear about them in the positive way, right? Like, oh, you know, he'll throw elbows on you, or he'll do anything he can on the basketball floor. Or Jed says he finds a way to win at everything. Well, that's what he looks like when you lose. So what is he fuming about? What is he thinking? He's sitting there in Joe's office. They're talking through the game. Is he pissed at Joe like some of the fans are pissed at Joe? Is he just angry at the outcome and trying to think about what they can do to change it? And as I'm there, I'm wondering, does Theo want Justin Wilson to be trusted in that moment? That's what I'm sitting there wondering, because you know how Theo jumped in our conversation to say, well, Justin Wilson against Daniel Murphy 0-for-6 with 4 Ks. Theo quickly said, yes, you can trust, there's time to trust him again, all those kinds of things. He went out and traded for the guy. He went out and got him. He's been a debacle. Here you are in the eighth inning against the Nats, and they don't have a single lefty that they like more than Carl Edwards. And I understand Joe not liking them, but I wonder what Theo thinks. If you got another thought, let's kick it around. But that was as angry as I've ever seen him. That's for damn sure.
We'll do it after the update. Chris Carter in 10 minutes on the score. That's Theo Epstein on the Spiegel and Parkin Show. We'll talk to Chris Carter in 10 minutes about Bears and Vikings. Spieg saw Theo fuming after Game 2. Is it the result, or is it something more specific that he thought could have been avoided based on the personnel that he gave Joe Maddon? The guy is a competition-aholic. It's impossible to read his mind, but I also would think that when you have a lead and you're about to sweep the D.C. portion of it, and you have a multiple run lead, and you're in the eighth inning, something tells me that he's not thinking, damn, Carl Edwards just should have executed a pitch. You know what I mean? Like, I would imagine that that's not the anger. Like, if he was totally in line with the process of it, sure, he'll be pissed about the result. But my guess is some of that, of course, is the second guessing that all of us are doing. But if that's the case, I will still say, I disagree with him. Joe Maddon, he's the guy who's sticking his neck out with all of those decisions, right? He's the one who gets second-guessed. And if I'm Joe Maddon, do I want to go down with Carl Edwards or with Justin Wilson? It's a no-brainer for me.
It is right now.
That's what I'm saying.
It is right now.
And you can be mad about that, and you could say, I made this trade, and I went out, and I got this guy, and his splits against this lefty are good, and historically it's this, and let's go with the sample and all that.
And in the end, it's up to Joe to choose what he's going to do.
Exactly.
This is the kind of the crippling feeling, even for the uber-powerful baseball executive, is that in the end, the manager does stuff while you're up in a box. You know?
Yeah, I mean, for the fan, too.
Oh, for sure for the fan, but also for those for execs. They hate managers. They freaking
right.
even the good ones. But they hate managers because they have to make. They're the ones who get freed up to make the decisions after you have bought all the groceries and put everything there and supplied all the information. In the end, you have to trust their gut. So if there is something that Theo disagreed with, it's up to Joe. Joe's got the power in that moment to do it. And the other thing is just that general feeling of like we had him down.
That's how I was feeling.
Right?
Like, I don't subscribe to the, like, oh, well, we went in hoping for
a split.
That's like if you make a Super Bowl prediction before the season and then you see four games happen and the starting quarterback gets hurt and it's like, well, I made it before the season.
Yeah.
No, come on.
Don't.
You were winning in the eighth inning. That was a tough loss to have. Now, it doesn't mean that you're unhappy with the 18 innings.
Yeah, but don't pretend that you come back feeling good about everything.
Exactly.
Because you had them down and were about to come back looking to finish them off today, and now they are awake with confidence and their ace going today. Nobody wants to be there.
But I don't feel bad today either. I just don't feel nearly as good as I could have. Like, I don't feel bad.
Hey, man.
I feel neutral, and I was expecting in the eighth inning of Game 2, after having already won Game 1, finishing Game 1 with seven no-hit innings.
It was not going to be that easy. It looked like it was, and then quickly now, we know it's not.
We gotta step aside for Chris Carter, but with Scherzer today, we're expecting a lineup soon. How many lefties? Because the splits are pretty drastic. This year, righties, 425 OPS against Scherzer, lefties, 692.
Wow.
16 of the 22 home runs allowed by Scherzer this year were by lefties. So John Jay is clearly in.
I think John Jay plays center field and leads off today.
I agree with you.
I think Kyle Schwarber is in left field. I hope Kyle Schwarber's in left field.
I agree.
If it's not Schwarber, it'll be Zobrist.
Is there any chance Tommy La Stella starts?
Yes. I think that would be a really bold thing to do, but La Stella has terrific numbers against Scherzer.
Very small sample,
but if you don't use Jay, you could use La Stella as your leadoff if you play him. And maybe that means you play him at second instead of Baez for a while, and then Baez does come back in to play defense later on when it matters. La Stella is the wild card. But I still suspect Jay in center and leading off, and I hope Schwarber in left.
Yeah, I will be surprised if La Stella starts, but it's at least interesting. And those splits for Scherzer, lefty-righty, are pretty drastic. Again, 16 of the 22 home runs he's allowed this year by left-handed hitters. Chris Carter, amazing storyteller, hell of a career. We'll talk Bears and Vikings with him next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Game-winning touchdown, Vikings over Bears, 1994, caught by our next guest, Chris Carter.
Now, the Vikings swept the Bears that year, but that is the year the Bears went into Minnesota on the 1st of January and took care of the Vikings in the playoffs 35-18. Not to start on a bad note with our guest, but if you're playing the regular season highlight, we should remind him what happened in the postseason.
No. Let him be built up off the regular season. Not that he needs it. He's a Hall of Famer. He's the host of First Things First on Fox Sports 1. You could watch it in the morning with Jenna Wolf and Nick Wright. CC, we appreciate the time in Chicago ahead of Bears and Vikings. How's it going, man?
Thank you. Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're doing very well. What's the first memory that comes to mind for you when you think of all your Bears-Vikings games?
I got to say probably the Mike Ditka coming into the Metrodome, because he hated the Metrodome. He called it like the Roller Dome. So the fans always had a interesting greeting for Coach when he came to Minneapolis. Those are probably be my fondest memories of that rivalry.
Well, that game in 92 when Ditka goes off on Jim Harbaugh, you remember that one? Harbaugh audibled and Ditka lost it on him and just berated him on the sideline. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I do remember that one.
Scored a couple touchdowns in the fourth quarter, blew the Bears away.
What did those Vikings fans say to Ditka, if you can clean it up for the radio?
Oh, I can't remember exactly. That's been too many years ago to remember exactly what that. But it was the Minnesota people are the nicest people in the world. But their fans are they're all in on the Vikings. So, but they're the nicest people until they're cheering for the Vikings.
What about this current Vikings team? Because obviously we're all excited about Trubisky. We know the defense is great. What do you think of the matchup tonight?
Wait. You're excited about the Bears' defense is great?
No, the Vikings defense is great, but we're excited about Trubisky making his debut.
Okay.
Where we have hope for a Bears quarterback.
Well, tell me what you're excited about.
Excited about a potential franchise quarterback finally getting into a game when we had to watch Mike Glennon, man. It's been a rough month around here, Chris.
And right, so, okay. I was just wondering, like, because if Mike Glennon was good enough to keep him on the bench, and we saw Mike Glennon. I mean, have you set yourself up tonight to be disappointed?
Oh, I fully admit that I am potentially, too hyped up. I will admit that. But here's the thing. Like, they signed Mike Glennon before they drafted Trubisky. They wanted Trubisky to sit, and then Glennon was awful. So I don't think it was, like, a fair, like, true open competition that Mitch Trubisky lost to Mike Glennon. They're playing the rookie because Glennon was awful.
Okay, let's be realistic, though. If the rookie comes in and he's great, do you think Glennon ever sees the field?
I hope
Forget
not.
About the business plan that you supposedly thought the Bears front office had. But if the rookie's better, do you think he sees the field or not?
Yeah, no, I think they had this plan all along. We really do. And, like, this is sooner than they want to do it. And so that's, like, the philosophical question right around the league is whether you wait on a quarterback or not. I think they were locked and loaded, Chris, on waiting to put Trubisky in for a while. Should that be the way in the NFL anymore? I mean, look how good Deshaun Watson is, right? And we see Kaiser get benched in Cleveland. It's, people still have differing thoughts on that. Where are you these days on a young quarterback playing or not?
Well, I'm all about the best players playing. If the second guy, I don't care if he's a rookie, if he's better than the veteran, put the guy in there. He's going to learn a lot more playing than he is on the bench. All right, so I'm not into that. Well, it's going to take a certain amount of time to develop. What happens, the kids who were getting from college, they're not ready for the NFL. So you can say Chicago had some type of plan. They wanted Trubisky. Why in the heck, if you don't have a quarterback, would you draft someone who you think is going to take some time to develop? Unless you thought he was Peyton Manning or something.
Well, because it's the Bears, CC. We have a very low expectation of competency, okay? Like, I'm not expecting it all to make sense, but I am expecting Trubisky to be better than Glennon because it's almost impossible for him not to be.
Well, all rookie quarterbacks, for the most part, struggle. You also have to look at the supporting cast. Their defense is going to have to play well. They do have a couple running backs that they're going to have to eat up the clock to make the game simpler for him. People talk about Dak last year, but they miss on Zeke rushed for 1,000 yards on first down last year. Just on first down. That's my boy Nick Wright. He's into the numbers and everything. It's one of the most impressive stats I've ever seen. So how hard was it for Dak? It was very easy for him, but that's not the learning curve that rookie quarterbacks come into this league. They're typically forced to score some points. Their offense is one-dimensional. They can't get the protection. They get hit. And just like veteran quarterbacks, no one likes to get hit. So let alone a young guy who doesn't have the understanding of the NFL, the offense, and the anticipation, it's really hard to learn on the job for young quarterbacks.
Chris, what was it like to be part of a Vikings juggernaut when you got Jake Reed and you got Randy Moss, and whether it's Moon or then you had Randall, when you just know that nobody can stop your offense? You know you're rolling in someplace, all right, we're going to put a 30-burger on these guys. What's that confidence like as an athlete?
It's very empowering, but it's also, it goes throughout the team, the confidence. Wide receivers typically have a lot of confidence, but when you're able to duplicate that with numbers, not only game after game, but year after year. And even before we got Jake Reed, you know, we had the tight end, great Steve Jordan, Anthony Carter, and Hassan Jones, and myself. So then we added Jake to that, and then several years after Jake and I went, we went four straight years, 1,000 yards each. Then we added Randy Moss. So I think the expectation for Minnesota and their franchise, it continues as far as the wide receivers, even Ty Diggs and Adam Thielen. You'll see in tonight's game, the Vikings are still dependent on the wide receivers making a lot of plays. It's been a tradition before I got there with Sammy White and Ahmad Rashad, and we continue it, and you'll see it tonight.
Talking to Chris Carter, host of First Things First with Jenna Wolf and Nick Wright, mornings on Fox Sports 1. You've told some pretty awesome Randy Moss stories that I've seen when I've been watching your television show. Is he the most naturally gifted athlete that you've ever been around?
He's one of the most gifted athletes. He's the most talented wide receiver that I think has ever played the position. But I've also played with some other players, John Randall, Randall McDaniel, Warren Moon, Reggie White. Like, all these guys are kind of in a class by themselves as far as who they were as athletes and not only players. So Randy's the most talented wide receiver I think that God's ever created. But from a position standpoint, I play with some other talent. I would say Warren Moon and Reggie White rival Randy Moss from an athletic standpoint, definitely based on the position that they played.
You also played with the Chicago legend Jim McMahon a little later in his career. What's your best Jim McMahon story?
It won't be a spiral.
Yeah, okay.
I've never seen a person who ingested more things before a game to get ready than Jim McMahon. I'll leave it at that.
Oh, no.
Wait a minute. Don't leave it at that.
You can't leave it at that on a morning after that Dolphins offensive line coach video comes out. We can't just leave it there, CC.
I mean, nothing illegal. I'm talking about, but I've never seen a person need more assistance to get on the field than Jim McMahon.
By that time, Jim was battered, wasn't he? He was
played through a lot of pain.
Yeah,
I mean, truly a warrior, though. I mean, truly a warrior, and he got everything out of the ability that he had.
What about Buddy Ryan, another Chicago legend? What did he mean to you?
Buddy was a good coach. Buddy was one of those kind of guys that made me have the fork in the road type of moment. So I have a great deal of respect for Buddy for what he did. There's a couple of different sides of the story. People like to say, well, Buddy Ryan, saved my career. Well, he didn't do it intentionally, but what ended up happening to me being cut and the following steps that took place after that, me going to Minnesota and making some adjustments in my life, those are the things that really saved my life. I'm appreciative for Buddy. For the tough love that he gave me, but it put me in a situation where I had to make some decisions, and I'm very, very proud of those decisions that I subsequently made after that.
Right, he didn't see the end of it, right? He was doing it out of, like, self-interest at the time. Is that what you mean when you said he wasn't saving your career intentionally?
No one lets you go from a job saying that they think, I'm helping you out. Like, this is going to turn your life around. Like, this is the best thing for you. No, that's not. No, they're getting rid of you because they want someone else to do the job or they don't believe in you.
Right. And then you got to choose to take responsibility or not. And you've talked about it. You did take some responsibility in that moment. Does that stick with you when you look at people who are struggling? When you talk, because Chris, you still help wide receivers and still help train some guys in the off season. You did that famously for a long, long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, it's still a huge part of what I like to do, stay attached to the game. But also, there's a younger generation of players that I have an opportunity to be with, talk to, and also get their perspective and find out what are some of the latest techniques that coaches are teaching. So it keeps me up on the craft. It keeps me engaged with a generation that didn't see me play, and it helps me be able to commentate because I'm getting the perspective of the generation that's playing now compared to when I played in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s.
Yeah, I remember those videos that you put up of you giving Odell Beckham some pointers. That was, I'm sure you were devastated of seeing that play from yesterday.
Well, I mean, I devastating is, this is football. You know, guys are going to get hurt. People are going to break bones. They're going to tear a ligament. So, I'm a person that Odell has asked to be around him and try to help him. So I'm not devastated. I mean, it's not going to change his life. I mean, he's not going to be able to play for a while, but he'll recover. Bones heal. Fractures, they heal. It won't affect his ability as a wide receiver. So us not seeing him out there as fans of the game, fans of the position, we're going to be robbed of that for this season or for maybe 6 to 10 weeks. But I think he'll be all right. I think that his career will still – this won't be a black mark on his career. So – devastated? No. I like to see the best players out there playing, no different than J.J. Watt. So I've been around this too long to say I'm devastated by an injury. Tom Brady got injured, and what did happen that season? We still played football. We still went on. He got injured the opening week of the season. People were like, oh, my God, what's going to happen? Tom's going on to even greater things in his career, which is the same thing I believe Odell will do.
Well, Chris, we really appreciate the time after you already put in a full day of work. We're enjoying the show. First thing first, people should check it out in the mornings with you, Nick Wright, and Jenna Wolf. We really appreciate you talking Bears and Vikings and telling some stories with us.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
That segment brought to you by Indeed.com. Are you hiring? Join the over 3 million businesses that use Indeed.com for hiring. Post your next job opening on the world's number one job site, Indeed.com. We're live at the park at Wrigley Field. Rich Campbell is here to talk Bears and Vikings with us on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.